You can hear the difference. Bright and beautiful music. KIXI, AM and FM, Seattle.
CBS News. Tentative agreement has been reached to end a 23-day strike by Broadway musicians in New York City. I'm Ann Crosman reporting on the CBS Radio Network. New York Mayor's Abraham Breem announced the tentative settlement between the Musicians Union and the Association of Theater Owners and Producers at his home Saturday night. Details of the proposed new contract were not made public, pending ratification by the rank and file. The union local is scheduled to vote on the package Sunday night. The big issues in the strike had been money and the size of orchestras. Mayor Breem said he hoped that all nine shows which had been canceled by the strike would reopen on Monday. Three other shows scheduled to open were delayed by the strike. It had cost related industries about $2 million a day. New York City, which is facing financial default, got a psychological shot in the arm on Saturday when Vice President Rockefeller said that Congress should pass a bill to help the city, but only if the city produces a plan for a balanced budget by 1978. Rockefeller did not specify what kind of bill during his Columbus Day speech in New York, but a spokesman said that Rockefeller thinks the federal government should guarantee city bonds for a short time until investors' confidence is regained. The spokesman also said that Rockefeller did not clear his speech beforehand with President Ford and that the vice president was speaking for himself. Mr. Ford has consistently said that New York cannot expect to be bailed out by the federal government. More news after this.
A lot of happy facts have been written down for you. Learn the happy facts and be a happier you.
We're the Consumer Information Center of the U.S. General Services Administration, and we have a lot of happy facts, useful facts, over 250 government publications, just filled with facts about nutrition, about simple home repairs, about what records you should keep. You can learn how to remove stains or how to take care of your car. All kinds of facts. For a free catalog, write Consumer Information, Pueblo, Colorado, 81009. Learn the little-known facts of life that can help make your life a little happier.
Facts you can keep, facts you can use. Learn happy facts and be happier you.
Send for your free catalog. Write Consumer Information, Pueblo, Colorado, 81009.
Japanese Emperor Hirohito had a full day in Honolulu, where he and the Empress are spending the weekend. They're scheduled to fly home to Tokyo on Monday. The Emperor visited a museum where he saw a diary kept by some shipwrecked Japanese sailors back in 1848 and some medals that Japanese emperors had presented to Hawaiian kings. The imperial couple had lunch with Hawaii's governor and attended a reception of 2,000 people, some of whose names were selected by a computer from voter registration rolls. More on that story from Walt Jones of CBS radio affiliate KHVH.
At a reception Saturday hosted by Governor and Mrs. George Ariyoshi, Emperor Hirohito made an indirect reference to the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor December 7, 1941. After thanking the governor for his hospitality, the emperor said, "The ties of friendship and commerce between the people of Japan and Hawaii reach back more than a century, and it is regrettable that those bonds were ever broken, and I rejoice that they were restored and are now stronger than ever before." Walt Jones for CBS News, Honolulu.
The Washington Post says that federal investigators are looking into allegations that Washington police and FBI informants conducted apparently illegal wiretapping to spy on radical groups between 1968 and 72. The Post quotes what it calls sources familiar with the investigation as saying that the spy operation took place with some frequency at the height of anti-war organizing in Washington and then increased at the time of major protests. The Post reports that allegation of illegal eavesdropping has prompted the Ford administration to drop plans to make former D.C. Police Chief Jerry Wilson head of the Drug Enforcement Administration. But the Post says the investigation has not turned up any evidence that Wilson was involved in the apparently illegal operation. More in a minute.
We shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall.
Not too long ago, this was both the most loved and the most hated song in America. But as we began to overcome the problems this song symbolized, we realized there was still much more to overcome. Hard, concrete problems that only knowledge could resolve. Today we stand closer than ever to the answers to these problems. Close, but not close enough. Give to the college of your choice now so that our young people can make the difference between a bright tomorrow or maybe no tomorrow at all. That way, I'll bet we can overcome just about anything.
We can overcome someday.
A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
Lawyers and judges from 121 countries gather in Washington Sunday for a six-day meeting to discuss ways of bringing the world's people under the umbrella of one law. The representatives will be talking about how to get the legal community in every country to back up international treaties, especially those dealing with human rights. I'm Ann Crosman, CBS News.
CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. What is a life of adventure? Some people seem to be forever caught up in a maelstrom of events, while others go along doing humdrum tasks. Of course, what one person calls exciting is to another just an everyday occurrence. And some people seem content with what Thoreau called lives of quiet desperation. But there is a difference. Certain individuals create their own excitement. Perhaps we never find adventure unless we go looking for it. But when we do find it, the results may be quite unexpected.
Are you sure, miss, that you want to get off at Foothill Junction?
Of course. Are we almost there?
We'll be in about 5 minutes. But it beats me why anyone should want to get off at the end of nowhere.
The train does stop here, doesn't it?
Well, sometimes, when there's a reason.
You mean it's not a regular stop on this line?
That's right. It's not a town, you know. Just a crossroad.
No stores? No post office?
Nothing but the station.
Well, I may be living there for quite a while.
But nobody lives in Foothill Junction.
My uncle does.
Your uncle?
Yes, Uncle Caleb, a station master.
You're staying with him?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's hard to believe.
Our mystery drama, Stairway to Oblivion, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Elizabeth Pennell and stars Anne Shepherd. It is sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Buick's 1976 Century Regal is the most luxurious midsize car Buick builds. But it's also got a practical side. In fact, it makes a concession to practicality that no other American midsize car does. It comes with a V6 engine, and a Buick V6 at that. Regal, It's got the spirit.
When the leaves swirl, I want to drink one thing.
James Harris's ambition is to leave his children a family home. He's going to do it because he and others in Scott, Arkansas, have started a housing cooperative with a grant from the Campaign for Human Development.
I mean, I leave him no money, but I can leave him something they can lay their hands, say this is mine.
The Campaign for Human Development, the United States Catholic Conference.
Army infantryman, you have to own more than a good pair of boots.
Go!
You have to own the nerve to rappel from a helicopter and the stamina to survive in the wilderness. You need the savvy to find water where it hasn't rained, food where you can't see any, and your way home where the stars are your only roadmap. You also need the skill to turn ropes into bridges, ponchos into rafts, and personnel carriers on a dime. Infantry in today's army isn't easy, but then hardly anything worthwhile is.
Join the people who join the army. You could start building your tomorrows today. Join the people who join the army. You could go a long, long way.
For information, call 800-523-5000 toll free. Join the people who join the army.
It is true that Julia had spent most of her life in the city, and at age 35, she gave every appearance of being a sophisticated woman quite able to take care of herself. Yet to an outsider, it might seem odd that she was stepping off a train at what looked like an abandoned station. But Julia had her reasons. For the past 3 years, she had cared for her ailing father. Now he was dead. And before taking up a new life, she wanted to satisfy a long-time curiosity to visit her one remaining relative, an uncle she has never met, but with whom she has corresponded.
I always wondered why my father was reluctant to talk about his older brother. He never bothered to listen when I tried to read him excerpts from Uncle Caleb's letters. The past few weeks had been difficult. Disposing of family possessions and selling a big house. I was tired. I needed a respite. The idea of spending a quiet time on a remote mountaintop was very appealing.
Well, we're here, miss. Hey, I'll help you with your bags.
Thank you.
I don't see Caleb. Must be inside the station house.
What a dilapidated building.
Yeah, should be torn down. All we need here is a switch box. You wait. I'll see if I can find the old man. Caleb? Caleb?
Yeah, yeah. Why's the train stopping? You're 2 minutes late.
Caleb, we have a very special passenger.
What's that? A passenger?
Yeah. Lady says she's your niece.
Julia? But not today. It's next week she's coming. Next week.
She's waiting for you right now here on the platform.
Oh, dear me. Julia? Julia, my dear, forgive me, but I thought it was next week you were coming.
Hello, Uncle Caleb. Well, you said in your letter...
Are you sure you'll be all right, miss?
Of course she's all right. Now, give me those bags and get going. Train's 5 minutes late.
Oh, Uncle Caleb, it's good to meet you at last. I'm sorry if there's some mistake about the date of my arrival.
Oh, it's all my fault. Months and days have a way of all blending together up where I live.
Afraid I've brought quite a bit of luggage. My clothes and some books for you are in that big one. Do we have far to go?
Yeah, straight up those stairs.
Oh, that stairway looks as though it goes on forever.
Just about. I told you I'd lived on top of the world. This bag of yours is mighty heavy.
Wait, perhaps if we carried it together.
Well, I'm afraid we can't manage everything at once. I'll Just lock the big bag up in the station house.
But Uncle Caleb, all my clothes are in there.
Don't worry about that. We'll get them tomorrow. You take the little bag and start up the stairs very slowly. I'll catch up with you.
68, 9, 70.
And plenty more to go.
You climb these stairs every day?
Yeah, you get used to them. Here's the one resting place.
I see a path leading off there. Where does that go?
Just off in the woods. Take a look at the view.
Oh, it's breathtaking. Or maybe it's just the climb that's taking my breath away.
Yeah, we'll be there in a moment now. Just keep going. Mm-hmm. See? That's my house. It sort of comes at you all of a sudden.
Oh.
Look, careful.
Oh.
Should have warned you about that stone.
Looks like a marker.
Yeah, that it is. Read what it says.
O-B-L. Oblivion.
Yeah, that's the name of my hideaway. Very appropriate, don't you think?
I guess so. It's rather frightening. Why, Uncle Caleb, it's fantastic.
I thought you'd like it.
The books. And a laboratory, too. What are you doing with those bottles and things?
Oh, I like to potter with my pots and potions. Bugs and toads in those jars, but... Oh, dear me, I know you'd like to freshen up, and I haven't even got the towels ready.
Don't you worry about anything, Uncle Caleb. I'm pretty good at foraging for myself. Whatever there is to do, please let me help you.
The bedrooms are down that way, and... excuse me, I just remembered. I left poor Crepe Hanger shut up in the basement.
I knew about Crepe Hanger. I was eager to see the rest of the house. A long hallway opened off the living room with uneven floorboards and many doors, all of them closed. I moved cautiously, and then, at the very end of the hall, one door was ajar. I went in, expecting the worst. But my sagging spirit soared. It was a bright, cheerful room with a window and a view. I knew it wasn't Uncle Caleb's bedroom, even though a pair of well-worn jeans hung over the back of a chair. But my uncle was calling me, and I hurried to tell him I'd found my room.
Well, here she is. Crepe Hanger, this is Julia.
What a beautiful, beautiful cat.
You see, she knows you're a member of the family. And now, my dear, I must show you to your room.
Oh, I've already found it.
You found Julia's room?
The one at the very end. The door was open and I went in.
No, my dear, that room is not for you.
Oh, but it looks so comfortable. And it has such a nice view.
You haven't seen your Aunt Julia's room. That's the only place for the woman of the house.
Well, Aunt Julia never lived in this house.
Oh, no, my dear. Your Aunt Julia's been dead for 20 years. But she would have liked her room. And so will you. Through this door here.
It looks like my grandmother's bedroom when I was a child.
And some of the same furniture. I've been saving it for you. You wanted a view? Now look out here.
Oh, you never wrote me about your garden.
Well, it's at its best just before sundown. And now, at last, I bid you truly welcome. As you can see, you have come home.
I didn't know whether to laugh or cry. The dresser reminded me of my mother's. And feeling like a child, I stealthily opened the top drawer and... Oh, Uncle Caleb!
What's the matter? Julia, what is it?
I opened this drawer. There's a whole nest of baby mice.
Well, yes, of course. And we mustn't disturb them.
Disturb them? I don't like mice.
Now, Julia, the mice are happy here. It's the perfect place for a nest. Crepe hanger can't get them. And they'll never bother you. It's always a great comfort to have living creatures in the house.
Uncle Caleb took me into the rear of the garden. Dark trees rose in the background, but there was a wide, cleared space laid out in plots and pathways. And there was a marvelous fragrance in the air.
Well, I hope you'll spend a great deal of time out here.
It's an herb garden. Oh, it's charming. Let's see, that's thyme, and this is sage.
Oh, I'm a classicist. Now, there's rosemary, and rue, and this is comfrey. It's very good for healing cuts and bruises.
What an array.
And here's what I call my poison plot.
Well, it doesn't look very sinister. Lily of the Valley, larkspur, Jack in the Pulpit, iris, and buttercups.
Deadly poison. Every one.
Oh, Uncle, you're joking. Oh, I noticed these from the window, but I'm relieved to see that they're not gravestones, just natural outcroppings of rock. Forgive me, but from a distance, there's something about the way your garden's laid out made it look like a cemetery.
Oh, I planned it that way.
Oh, Uncle Caleb, you're a ghoul.
Now, don't laugh. This is a proper graveyard, all right. And someday, my Julia and I will be laid to rest here, side by side.
His words were strange. And after I went to bed, I tossed and turned for hours, ridden with horrible nightmares. I woke late, dressed, and headed down the hallway. Good morning, Crepehanger. Where's my uncle? I went into the surprisingly modern kitchen, efficient like a hospital, except that the many shelves were filled with herbs and spices. The makings for a substantial breakfast were on the table, and there was a note from Uncle Caleb which said, I'll be back at 11:30. You know your way to the garden. But please do not, in big capital letters, open any other doors. I'll explain later. Well, he needn't worry. I was not about to pry. But I did want to get outside, and my clothes seemed all wrong for country wear. Then I remember the jeans in the front room. If that door was still open, I wouldn't be breaking any rules. It was. Just as it'd been the day before, and I snatched up the jeans from the back of that chair. Just my size if I rolled up the bottoms. I didn't stop to wonder who they might belong to, for now they were mine. When Uncle Caleb came back, I was happily kneeling in the garden trying to identify the herbs.
Julia! Julia!
I'm out in the garden.
Well, I'm glad to see... Julia.
Yes, Uncle Caleb.
Where did you get those...
Those what?
That disgraceful pair of pants.
Oh, I saw them yesterday in that back room there.
I'll take them off at once.
Well, I will if you've brought my suitcase. I have a couple of pairs of slacks.
Sorry, my dear, but I could not bring your suitcase. Freight train left a box of provisions, and I had too much to carry.
But I have no other clothes to wear.
We'll take care of that. Come with me to your room. Over there, in the trunk, Julia. Open it.
But these are Aunt Julia's clothes. I can't wear anything like this.
Look down further. You'll find something.
Oh, what an elegant cashmere sweater. And these skirts, just the kind they're wearing today. Yes, there were plenty of things in that trunk I could wear. Even a denim wraparound for gardening. Then... at the very bottom, I came upon a long sequined evening gown, and pinned to it was a note which read, "This is the dress I want to be buried in."
What has our Julia gotten herself into? Even her clothes are no longer her own. The aura around Caleb and his house grows ever more ominous, as you will discover when I return shortly with Act Two.
Your Lung Association takes great pride in preventing the half a dirty dozen.
They call me tuberculosis. TB for short, but not for long, right? Wrong.
I'm chronic bronchitis. That's my trademark. Don't dismiss it lightly, unless you'd like to meet my friend here.
Emphysema, that's me. The kind of guy who'd steal your last breath. Occasionally, I'm mistaken for...
asthma. I'm strictly impartial. I don't care whose breath I rob. I even steal from kids.
I'm a cigarette. Now, I may be a little, but I'm dangerous. After all, you know what they say about small packages.
Air pollution, alias the gray ghost. I can do more damage at one time than all these guys put together just by hanging around.
To join in the fight against breath robbers, see your doctor at the first sign of shortness of breath. Don't smoke and try to avoid polluted air. Your Lung Association considers it a matter of life and breath.
In God We Trust, America Speaks.
In the words of Eleanor Roosevelt, all human beings have failings. All human beings have needs and temptations and stresses. Men and women who live together through long years get to know one another's failings, but they also come to know what is worthy of respect and admiration in those they live with and in themselves. If at the end one can say, this man used to limit the powers that God granted him, he was worthy of love and respect and of the sacrifices of many people, made in order that he might achieve what he deemed to be his task, then that life has been lived well, and there are no regrets.
Presented by the Catholic Communications Foundation.
As the days slipped by, oblivion cast a strange spell of lethargy over Julia. For a time, she offered to help her uncle carry her suitcase up the stairs, and then forgot all about it. She even lost all curiosity about what was behind those closed doors. Caleb, too, seemed far more relaxed. They spent many happy hours together in the garden, and Julia became engrossed in the study of herbs. She had grown fond of her Uncle Caleb. But this false sense of peace was abruptly shattered early one afternoon when Julia was alone in the garden.
Hello? Hello in there.
Oh, John, of course he's not here. It's Wednesday.
Oh, that's right. Let's go around back and see what the old buzz has been up to in his garden.
John, look. Somebody's there.
It's a woman.
Now, don't frighten her.
Excuse me, miss.
Oh.
I'm sorry. We came by to say hello to Caleb.
People. Yes. We're people, but you're looking at us as though we were ghosts.
But, how...
Oh, well, we're just the summer folks from down the hill.
Uncle Caleb never mentioned...
Caleb, he's your uncle?
Well,
he never mentioned you either.
No, I'm here on a visit, but I thought this was... the only house around for miles and miles.
It is, except for our cabin.
I haven't seen any cabin.
Halfway down the stairs.
Oh, yes, I saw a path.
Well, you follow that way into the woods, and there we are. For 3 months of the year, anyway.
Only this year, Caleb's in for a surprise. We told him we weren't coming.
I see Caleb has put you to work in what Emily and I call his cemetery.
Oh, I thought that at first. I guess it's because of those two rocks that look so much like tombstones.
I have an idea they are tombstones.
Let's go inside, shall we, until Uncle Caleb comes home. I don't think we should be snooping around this way.
Now, aren't you afraid to stay in this spooky house? That skeleton would be enough to turn me off.
Don't tell me there's a skeleton in one of the closets.
Oh, not in a closet. He rolls it around on a coat rack kind of thing.
It must be one of the surprises behind this closed door. How do you know so much about this house?
When we first came here, Caleb showed us all over the place.
I think he was trying to frighten us. But we don't scare very easily.
Old man never talks about himself. But he's a good neighbor.
Except when he has visitors. Then he doesn't want anyone else around.
Why? I don't understand.
Well, neither do we. I've been meaning to ask Caleb if I could paint that marvelous view from his guest room. But of course, now you're staying there.
Oh, I'm not in that room.
Oh, where are you staying?
Up the hall on the other side, looking into the garden.
Oh, well, then maybe Caleb will let me paint in the guest room this year.
I'm sure he will. But you keep calling it the guest room. My uncle never wrote about any visitors. Were there many?
Since we've been coming up, there were just that older man.
And the boy.
When was this?
Oh, the man was here about 4 or 5 years ago. Isn't that right, Emily?
I'd say so. And then he was gone, and we saw the boy 2 years ago.
And nobody here last summer.
Wonder who they were.
Well, I thought maybe the boy was your brother or nephew. He called him Uncle Caleb, too.
But that's very puzzling.
Say, I'd like to go down the hall and look at that view again. The light should be just right.
I don't want Uncle Caleb to come back and think that we're...
But he won't be back until after 3 o'clock. And we can hear the train when it goes by.
This must be Wednesday.
Oh, so you've forgotten what day it is, too.
They just all blend together. You know, Uncle Caleb has a built-in time clock, even though he doesn't remember dates. He's down at that station every morning when the freight train comes through. And then one day a week, he waits for the passenger train.
Come along, then. Let's take a look at that view. Look at those peaks.
Mm.
I know just the purple I'm going to use.
Yeah, I'd forgotten how great it is.
This room, a man and a boy. I found a pair of jeans in here.
Well, now, you may be forbidden to open closed doors, but I'm the nosy type. Can't resist closets. Let's see what's in here.
Well, look. It's filled with clothes.
Men's work suits. And this old jacket. But it's not Uncle Caleb's size.
And no one but a teenager could wear these.
Well, I'll be damned.
There goes the train.
Yeah.
Uncle Caleb will be back soon.
Well, it'll take him a while to climb the stairs. Now, how do you feel about opening dresser drawers?
Oh, no. I'm afraid to after what I found in the drawer in my room.
Okay, it's my turn. Here goes.
Men's work gloves, socks. Here's a jackknife.
Wait a minute. Here's something interesting. The wallet. And it's empty. Except for this sort of ID card. Let's see. Name, James J. Flanders. Address has been crossed out. Date of birth, it's almost illegible. Looks like 1900.
Well, that has to be old Jim. Isn't that what he said his name was?
And if he were alive today, his age would be...
What makes you think he's dead?
Well, because this is his wallet. And in there, all his clothes.
But the boy's clothes are there, too. Why didn't he take them with him?
Look, we have to get out of here. Your uncle will be coming home, and I'm sure he'll be angry to find us talking to you.
We were in the living room, and they were about to leave. John had already opened the front door... And then we heard...
Julia! Julia!
We hurried to the top of the stairs to find Uncle Caleb doubled over, ashen-faced and struggling to breathe.
It's been a bad day. Trouble on the tracks.
Caleb, it's John and Emily. What can we do?
Just help me into the house. I'll be all right in a minute.
John and I supported my uncle... walking him slowly to the house. When I suggested going straight to his bedroom, he protested so vehemently, we eased him into a chair near the fireplace.
Well, young fella, what are you doing here?
We're back at the cabin for the summer.
Yeah? What happened to your trip to Europe?
I had to give it up.
But you didn't come in on the 3 o'clock.
No. We got here yesterday.
Not on the freight train, you didn't.
No, we backpacked.
From where?
You left the car at Bearsville.
I see.
Uncle Caleb's head drooped forward, and he was seized with a violent coughing. I'd already loosened his collar, and now I tried to rub his chest. Uncle Caleb, you must have some digitalis. Where is it?
Foxglove. In that jar on my big table. Lily of the Valley. Put it in some water. And John and Emily, you can help me to my room. I must lie down.
I put water on the stove and found the bottle labeled Lily of the Valley Root. With shaking hands, I measured a very small portion into a cup of hot water and took it down the hall to my uncle's bedroom.
It's all right, my dear. I wanted to spare you for a little while, but you'd see it sooner or later.
I couldn't believe I was seeing it then. The walls and floor were black, and so was the big bed with a prow, like a Viking ship. My uncle looked like a ghost propped up against those white pillows. And thank heaven, John had warned me, because there, on one side of the bed, was that coat rack thing from which dangled a full-size skeleton.
Don't be frightened, my dear. You'll soon get used to everything around here.
Uncle Caleb needs a doctor. How do I get one?
No way, not up here.
But there's a telephone down at the station.
Yes, but no passenger train until next week.
We have to tell the train company that Uncle Caleb won't be able to...
Oh, you'd be surprised. He's a sturdy old man, and he's had these attacks before. I'll flag down the freight train tomorrow.
But Julia shouldn't be left alone with him. I think we should stay here.
You're darn right we're going to stay.
Well, I'm not helpless, really, I'm not. I've taken care of my father for the last 3 years.
Frankly, I'm worried, Julia. Now, what if your uncle is only pretending to be sick?
How can you say that? You saw for yourself.
I've seen other things, too. Like what's down in the basement.
Look, you've both said that. What is down in the basement?
There are 2 carved gravestones.
That doesn't surprise me.
But one has the name Caleb, and the other name is Julia.
Doesn't that tell you something?
Yes. Uncle Caleb told me that one day he would rest peacefully in the garden behind this house next to his Julia.
But that's you.
Oh. Now I see what's troubling you. He meant his wife, my Aunt Julia. I'm beginning to think her remains may already be in the garden.
I wonder.
Julia! Where's my Julia?
I hurried to Uncle Caleb's room. Feeling better?
Yes. Yes, my dear. Do you remember that time when you were feeling so very ill, and I asked what you'd like for supper?
Oh, that must have been Aunt Julia.
Then you looked at me so sweetly, just the way you're looking now. And I said, I'd do anything in the world for you, Julia. Anything to help you.
And I'm sure you did.
Always tried to help people like Jamie and Robin.
Oh, John. John, let's go back in the house.
All right. I'll leave the shovel here. But that's all the proof I need.
It's horrible. But what are we going to tell Julia?
John, all that dirt. Where have you been?
Sit down, Julia. There's something we've got to talk about.
No, don't tell her, John. Annie, you have to get away from this evil place.
Oh, stop it, both of you. My uncle may be eccentric, but he's a kind, gentle old man.
Yeah, I used to believe that, but no more.
We're letting our imaginations run away with us.
But, Julia, I have the proof.
Proof of what?
I remembered that 4 years ago, there was only one stone in the backyard. Then, last year, the smaller one had been added.
Go on.
So, I took a shovel and went out just now.
Oh, you had no right.
I didn't dig down very far. Just far enough to establish that two wooden coffins are buried out there. One of them is about 6 feet long, big enough for a man, and the other is smaller. Just about the right size to hold a boy.
Now, what do you think of the kindly Uncle Caleb? It's true that Julia was ready for adventure, but she has no intention of taking her dead aunt's place. Eccentricity is one thing, but the way things are shaping up, Caleb could be a scheming old man. Or else something has snapped in his brain and he has lost all sense of reality. In either case, Julia appears to be in a dangerous predicament. I'll be back shortly with Act 3.
In case you've forgotten how much fun driving can be, Buick would like to introduce you to Skylark, a small car that's all Buick, with room, comfort, and an engine that no other compact car in America offers, the incredible Buick V6. Skylark, it's free spirit made practical.
Mike Batchelor, ex-Peace Corps volunteer.
I gave Tunisia peace of my mind. I learned as much from them as they learned from me.
Matt Ryson, ex-Peace Corps volunteer and farmer.
I gave Mindanao a piece of my mind. Now I can grow practically anything, anywhere.
There are people all over this world who need your mind and your skill. Join the Peace Corps. Give the world a piece of your mind. Call Action, 800-424-8580.
This is a public service of this station and the Advertising Council.
Dr. Margaret Mead presents alternatives for working mothers.
When I was a child, I was always very much interested in children. And as I was growing up, I hoped to have 6 children, and I planned their names. Now, for many years, I was unable to have children. Finally, I was successful in having one child, whom I enjoyed very much, who was born just at the beginning of World War II. What I did was to move in with another family, and we shared the tasks of supporting and looking after this very large household, which is, I feel, the great solution for women who want to have children and also want to follow some kind of career.
Families together can find new ways of childcare so mothers can fully realize their God-given potential. Consider this option when you make choices. This affirmation of family by the Mennonite churches.
Julia has been confronted with some highly incriminating evidence against her uncle. If there really are 2 bodies buried in his garden, shouldn't the police be summoned? John, who made the discovery, is all for placing a telephone call at the railroad station to give a report on what he has found. But Julia is surprised at her own reaction. She feels protective toward her uncle. And although one might think she'd be grateful to have friendly neighbors, she finds herself resenting their interference.
Don't you see, Julia? It's our duty to turn your uncle in.
You don't know what you're talking about.
After what I've uncovered?
You have found nothing.
You call 2 coffins nothing?
None of us knows what's in those coffins.
Well, I can certainly find out in a hurry.
I forbid you to destroy my Uncle Caleb's garden.
Julia, you're beginning to sound as batty as... Oh, I'm sorry. I realize you've been through a lot, and you're not thinking straight.
I know my uncle better than you do. I'm thinking that the smaller coffin may contain the remains of my Aunt Julia.
And the other one?
Well, it's just like Uncle Caleb to be saving that one for himself.
Well, there's another way to find out.
You're right. Let's just ask Uncle Caleb.
But if he's really sick...
I mean when he gets stronger. In the meantime, I suggest we have some supper and then you can go home. There's really no reason for you to spend the night.
We're staying.
John, I want to thank you and Emily for what you've done to help me and Julia.
As lucky we were here.
Very lucky, because I have another favor to ask. My niece won't let me out of bed. The 11 o'clock freight will be going straight through. But if they should slow down, and I don't want them to think no one's minding the store.
Oh, I plan to be there when the train comes through.
But they won't be stopping today.
I'm going to flag them down.
No need to do that.
Emily and I need groceries. I want to place an order.
Freight company won't like it. Plenty of groceries here. I'll place a big order later on.
I'd rather do it myself, the way I used to.
Times have changed. But if the train does stop, tell them I'll be back on the job tomorrow.
I'll be off.
Oh, I'll go halfway down the stairs with you. I want to check up on the cabin.
It's good to have you here to look after us, girl.
I like being called that, Uncle Caleb.
Why, what did I call you?
A girl.
Well, of course. And that's what you'll always be. It's why I don't like to burden you with my problems.
If there's anything you want to tell me, Uncle Caleb, you know I'll always listen.
But it's just that if anything should happen to me, I want you to make certain that my Julia and I lie side by side, just as we always do.
You mean in the garden?
Yes. Yes, I've left instructions in my will, but I'll feel so much better knowing a member of the family will take care of things personally.
Well, of course, Uncle Caleb. You can count on me. But you know, you hadn't told me that Aunt Julia is already buried in the garden.
Oh, she isn't, Julia. Not by herself. We'll go together.
But where is she?
She's there, in that handsome urn, on my bedside table.
Mercifully, it was several hours before John and Emily returned. I'd calmed down and decided it was not yet time to give them this latest bit of information. John would be all too eager to rip the covers off those coffins, and there was no need to hurry. The dead could wait.
Hi, Julia. How's your uncle?
Resting comfortably, thank you. Well, where do you get that gaudy thing?
Down at the cabin. It's an extra calendar. I thought you'd better start keeping track of the days. I've circled today's date.
Well, thanks very much.
And here's a bag of oranges. The brakeman threw them off to me.
Then you did stop the train.
You bet I did. Had a talk with the engineer. He says there's no reason to have a station at Foothill Junction. And before long, any switching will be done by automation.
That means Uncle Caleb will be out of a job.
Well, okay, Julia. I didn't make any telephone calls. Kept my part of the bargain. What about yours?
Please. Give me just a few days more alone with my uncle. I'm sure there's an explanation. I put off asking Uncle Caleb any questions until one morning. I found him in the guest room admiring the view. He sat in a rocker stroking crepe hanger curled up in his lap. Uncle Caleb.
Hmm?
You know a man named Flanders.
Flanders?
Mm-hmm.
No, can't say I know anyone by that name.
Try to remember. James J. Flanders.
Why, you don't mean Jamie, do you?
I don't know. Who's Jamie?
Poor Jamie. He's dead. Very nice man.
He stayed in this room, didn't he?
And Amy loved this room. But how did you know he was here?
We found a wallet in that dresser with his name on it.
We? Now, who do you mean by we?
Well, I should say John found the wallet. But they knew about Mr. Flanders. I didn't.
Just what did they know about him?
Only that he was staying with you one summer. How did you meet him?
Meet Jamie?
Mm-hmm.
They rolled him off the freight one winter morning about 5 years ago. Poor derelict man. Thin as one of the rails he was riding.
And you brought him home?
True gentleman, if there ever was one. But the sickness had gone too far. Jamie didn't have long to live.
You took care of him?
Oh, I gave him food and clothes. His strength came back, and we thought he was going to be well. But it came too late. He loved it here, and he wanted to stay.
I see. So you buried him in the garden?
Well, it's where he wanted to be.
Uncle Caleb, there are two unmarked gravestones in your garden.
Oh, so you know about Robin, too.
I know nothing about Robin.
Dear Robin, I found him in the woods nearly starved to death, and it was October.
A boy? Way up here. Where did he come from?
From Bearsville.
No. You don't mean that he escaped from that mental institution?
That was no place for a bright boy like Robin.
Oh, Uncle Caleb. You can't just take in a boy who's a runaway.
And why not? He needed a home.
But didn't they look for him?
Oh, yes, but I hid him in the basement.
I don't know what to say. How long did this boy live with you?
Nearly a year. I tried so hard to help him. But, well, he must have been sickly from the time he was born. It was too late to save a small soul who'd been abandoned when he was a baby.
Uncle Caleb, when you say you helped him, do you mean that
I mean I gave him love and the only home he'd ever known. That's why Robin must never be taken away.
I realized if it were not for John and Emily, I too might sink completely under the spell of this place called Oblivion. Reluctantly, I went halfway down the stairs for the first time since I had climbed to the top and followed the pathway to the artist's cabin.
You believe everything he told you, don't you, Julia?
I have no reason to doubt anything he said.
I think it's the perversion of a demented mind.
John, don't say that. There's no harm in trying to help people. My uncle did nothing wrong.
Nothing wrong? He may have murdered two people, possibly more.
My uncle could never commit a crime.
It's a criminal offense to harbor fugitives. And no sane person buries bodies in the backyard.
Now, what are we going to do?
You're not going to do anything. I'm taking a trip to Bearsville.
You mean you're turning your uncle in?
No. I'm going to tell them about that poor boy. And if he had no family, I'm sure that
what about the man named Flanders?
Well, I'll get legal advice.
Well, you better let me handle it.
Take it easy, John. This is Julia's problem.
All right, all right. But if she doesn't come back with some straight answers, I'm going to the authorities and tell them exactly what I think.
It was a week to the day since Uncle Caleb's heart attack. He had been doing a little work in the garden and showing signs of restlessness. Emily had come over, I suspect just to check up on us. It was nearly 11 o'clock in the morning.
Julia, what day is today?
Well, let's see.
Where's the calendar I brought you?
Harry, I have to know.
The day you circled Emily was Saturday. So, it's Sunday. Monday, Tuesday. Today is Wednesday.
I should have known. I have to get down to the station.
Now, don't worry, Caleb. John's there.
You don't understand. I have to go. I have to do it.
Do what?
The switch. I have to throw the switch before the train passes the station. My jacket. Where's my jacket?
Just a minute, Uncle Caleb. You're not going anywhere.
It should have been fixed long ago. I told them the last time.
I'll go down the stairs with a message.
No one else knows what's wrong. I'm the only one.
You're not well enough. Not down that long flight of stairs.
Last week, trouble with the switch. It jammed, and I threw the emergency for the passenger train.
But the passenger train doesn't get here till 3. That should be plenty of time.
No, the way it's set now, the freight will go through on the passenger tracks. And about 20 miles from here, there'll be a head-on collision.
But there must be some way that you can...
The freight doesn't slow down on Wednesdays. I am the only one knows about that switch. I must hurry.
We're right with you.
Let go of me. I can't be late. Broken switch. Let go of my arm. I must move faster. Faster. No one must be hurt. No one will.
When I do what I have to do. He made it. Caleb, stop the train.
I know. He said he had to do it.
John? John, everything's all right now, isn't it?
Go on back up the hill, both of you. There's nothing you can do.
Well, then we don't need to give you the message?
What message?
About the switch, the broken switch.
Switch? So that's why he did it.
That's exactly why.
He should have told me last week.
Where is Caleb?
I suppose there was no other way. No other way to stop that freight train. Caleb threw himself across the track.
Uncle Caleb's death, like his wife's, was dedicated to helping people. Perhaps on the evidence you believe that, or if you have a different kind of imagination, you may believe there was a darker side to his nature. That's up to you. As for Julia, I'll tell you about her in just a moment.
Come on over for a drink.
What is a drink? Where is it written that a drink is not a drink unless it contains a slug of alcohol? Isn't lemonade a drink?
Aren't you drinking?
Isn't coffee fruit juice? Tea, water, soft drinks, are those non-drinks?
Let's get together for a drink.
Is it so uncool to drink something that can't change your perception of reality?
Let me buy you a drink.
The strange idea that only drinks containing alcohol are real drinks is so built into our society, it has actually become part of our language.
I'll drink to that.
And maybe that's part of our national drinking problem. What is a drink? Think about it. This message is brought to you as a public service by this station and the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism.
Would you like a drink?
I wonder what he meant by that.
Caleb left everything he possessed to Julia. And she, too, had fallen in love with that mountaintop. She reported the deaths of Jamie and Robin, but since no one claimed them, they rested in peace beside Caleb and Aunt Julia in the garden where they all wanted to be, in oblivion. Our cast included Ann Shepherd, Guy Sorrell, Mary Jane Higby, and Nat Polan. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
How do you render justice in your country?
We have courts, and we have judges, juries, lawyers.
Is it wise to allow people to judge people?
It is the best way, the most democratic.
Only the immortal gods may decide.
But how do you know to get them to make a decision?
The gods have sent my people a spring of sparkling water. The accused must drink at the spring.
And what does that prove?
The innocent walk away vindicated.
And the guilty?
The guilty fall down dead.
Well, it is hardly the way.
You will see it with your own eyes. We shall have a trial tonight.
Oh? Who is the accused?
You are.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
The sound of bright and beautiful music. This is KIXI, Seattle.
CBS News. The Soviet Union has reportedly turned thumbs down on an American proposal to buy Soviet oil at discount prices. I'm Ann Crosman reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The New York Times says that Soviet negotiators have rejected the American proposal and quotes administration sources as saying that the Kremlin is concerned with losing face by selling oil to the U.S. at prices lower than the going rate worldwide. One source is quoted as saying, "The Soviets see themselves as a major power and they're not going to enter into anything that looks like vassalage to the U.S." Another official is reported saying that Moscow is wary of doing anything that might appear to undercut Arab oil producers and cast doubt on Soviet support of Arabs in their disputes with Israel. The Times report comes at a time when American and Soviet negotiators are meeting in Moscow, trying to agree on a long-term American grain sale to the Soviets, linked with a Soviet sale of oil to the U.S. Last week, President Ford said that Washington might have to settle for a grain agreement without an oil deal. More news after this.
This is George Herman, CBS News, moderator of Face the Nation, heard Sundays over most of these stations. Tomorrow, our in-person guest will be former Texas Governor John Connally. Our panel of Washington newsmen will question the former Treasury Secretary in an unrehearsed and spontaneous interview. Join us for Face the Nation tomorrow with interview guest John Connally. It's one of the many interesting and informative broadcasts from CBS News, along with News on the Hour, over most of these CBS Radio network stations.
Here's a tip from your Better Business Bureau on the metric system. You know, soon everyone in the United States will be using the metric system on an everyday basis. Under the metric system, temperature will be measured in degrees Celsius and not Fahrenheit. For example, the freezing point of water is 0 degrees Celsius, while its boiling point is 100 degrees Celsius. For more information on the metric system, write to Metric Information Office, National Bureau of Standards, Washington, D.C.
Alabama Governor George Wallace and his family are on their way to London, the first stop of a six-nation tour. The governor's campaign organization is paying for most of the trip, the state of Alabama the rest. David Dick has arrived in London ahead of the governor and has this background report.
The official reason given for Governor Wallace's trip to Europe is fact-finding. It's in preparation for the governor's campaign for the presidency. His formal announcement is expected sometime after his return to the United States, but he may not make the official announcement until near the first of the year. The fact-finding includes a meeting here in London Monday with Prime Minister Wilson and then with Conservative Party leaders. There'll be meetings with government leaders in Belgium, Italy, Germany, and France. The trip will take about 2 weeks and conclude with a stop in Edinburgh, Scotland, where Mrs. Wallace plans to visit with the Wallace clan. She and her children will be wearing their kilts. There has been speculation about the state of Governor Wallace's health. He says he expects no difficulty in making the long trip. When it is over, he will probably point to it as proof that he can sustain the ordeal of another presidential campaign. David Dick, CBS News, London.
Tentative agreement was reached Saturday night between striking Broadway musicians and theater owners and producers. We won't know terms of the proposed contract until the rank and file ratify it. A vote is scheduled for Sunday night. A tentative agreement was announced by Mayor Beam at his home, where talks had been going on. Beam congratulated the chief state mediator, Vincent McDonald, for resolving what Beam called the toughest strike McDonald has had. The 23-day strike has forced shutdown of 9 musicals and postponement of openings for 3 others. Vice President Rockefeller has urged Congress to come up with a plan to help financially crippled New York City, provided New York produces a plan for a balanced budget by 1978. Rockefeller's statement differs from President Ford's, who has said repeatedly that the federal government cannot be expected to assist a city whose finances have been conducted irresponsibly for more than 10 years. Now this message.
In God we trust. America speaks.
In the words of Eleanor Roosevelt, all human beings have failings. All human beings have needs and temptations and stresses. Men and women who live together through long years get to know one another's failings, but they also come to know what is worthy of respect and admiration in those they live with and in themselves. If at the end one can say, this man used to limit the powers that God granted him, he was worthy of love and respect and of the sacrifices of many people, made in order that he might achieve what he deemed to be his task, then that life has been lived well, and there are no regrets.
Presented by the Catholic Communications Foundation.
Martha Mitchell has been released from a Northern Virginia hospital where she was receiving chemotherapy for a serious bone marrow disease. Her doctor has indicated that Mrs. Mitchell has a bone marrow disease which is malignant, but not a cancer in the strict sense of the term. The doctor has said that her prognosis is favorable for the foreseeable future. I'm Ann Crosman, CBS News.
On KIXI's Community Bulletin Board, we have this item. The King County Parks Division is sponsoring classes in painting, voice training, and guitar. Classes, which began this month, will be held at the Merrimore County Park Mansion, 6046 West Lake Sammamish Parkway Northeast near Redmond. For information and pre-registration, call 885-2216 or 344-3982.